Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, September 21st, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's good to have you with us, as always. On today's show, we'll talk with Dr. Michaela Martinez, this week's UAS Evening at Egan speaker, about the clockwork of epidemics. Joy Lyon will preview the upcoming Slam Dunk Town Hall. Joanne Wolfenstein will identify relief efforts for victims of Hurricane Irma. And Nancy Ducherney will be here with Arts Up and to talk about art activities and new art along the Seawalk. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon, currently 53 degrees in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Rita Daniels, in for Antonia Gonzalez. Firefighters continue to battle as many as 80 wildfires in 10 states, mostly the Pacific Northwest and the Northern Rockies. In South Dakota, state and tribal officials remain on high alert as continuing drought makes for dangerous conditions. Wildfire crews in that state recently contained two major fires in the Black Hills. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Several of South Dakota's reservations have struggled with drought for several months. A small part of the Cheyenne River Reservation has been in extreme drought since early summer. Drought has also affected the Standing Rock and Pine Ridge reservations. Oglala Lakota County in southwest South Dakota is home to the Pine Ridge Reservation. That area is in an extreme fire danger advisory for today. Katie Pajorli with the National Weather Service in Rapid City says Pine Ridge and other locations were under a red flag warning earlier this week.
Our criteria for a red flag warning is relative humidity at 15% or lower and winds, frequent winds of 25 miles an hour or gusts to 25 miles an hour. Just be careful with any flames today. Try not to start any fires.
Tribal lands belonging to the Yankton Sioux Tribe and the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate have been in drought this year as well, but rain in those areas has lessened the concern. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The American Indian Science and Engineering Society is gathering in Denver this week to try and inspire more Native American students to study science, technology, engineering, and math. Emerald Craig works with ASIS and says STEM is utilized by all walks of life, but we need more Native American representation.
STEM has always been a part of our knowledge, but it's a power of how we're going to make it work for us. We do have a traditional ecological knowledge. It is the basis of who we are, of what we are.
ASIS is celebrating their 40th anniversary this year by partnering with the Department of Energy in an effort to provide targeted outreach to Native youth, which includes college internships at various national laboratories. Well, fishermen in the Alaskan village of Quinhagak had nowhere to sell their catch this summer after their corporation-run plant decided to remain closed. The community is entering its second year without a buyer and is struggling to make ends meet, KYUK's Teresa Katsourilis reports.
In the good years, Quinhagak's fishermen used to earn up to $20,000 a season. But after 2 years without a buyer, some members of the community are getting desperate.
High prices in the stores fill up all those credit cards all the way up to $10,000 or more like that. It's hard to live here in Alaska.
Jimmy Annever is an elder who worked as a commercial fisherman for over 60 years. Other fishermen say they're struggling to pay for gas or water. The community used to sell their catch to a plant run by the Coastal Villages Region Fund, a corporation that's supposed to use its fishing quota to support local development. But they haven't reopened the plant in 2 years, saying it was losing money. And other fish buyers have fallen through. Warren Jones, the CEO of a more local village corporation, says he's doing what he can by hiring Quinhagak fishermen part-time.
People are suffering, and winter's coming. And we can't let nobody freeze to death.
He says he keeps several gallons of heating fuel on hand at his home. He never knows when someone might knock on his door in the winter, asking for heat. I'm Teresa Katsourilis.
For National Native News, I'm Rita Daniels.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Thursday, September 21st, 2017. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the hour. And in the studio now are two doctors to talk about UAS's evening at Eagan this Friday. We have Dr. Michaela Martinez in. She is the keynote speaker to be speaking on the clockwork of epidemics. Welcome to the show, Dr. Martinez.
Thank you.
So nice to have you here. And also Dr. Dave Tolman, he teaches biology out at UAS and what used to be Dr. Martinez's advisor. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. Well, welcome to the show, both of you. It's nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Okay, so 7 o'clock, UAS Eagan Library. Can you highlight a few of the points you'll be talking about tomorrow night, please?
Yeah, so I'm an infectious disease ecologist, and essentially what my work does is I take ecological principles and then apply those to the control of infectious diseases. And so tomorrow I'm going to be talking about cycles in infectious disease epidemics, so specifically polio outbreaks and chickenpox outbreaks, and how we actually use ecology to improve vaccination programs and such to kind of improve public health. And then the second part of the talk will be essentially addressing the question of whether or not humans are like other mammals, and do we have seasonal changes in our biology?
Oh, wow. What's on your radar right now? You mentioned chickenpox. What are you thinking about this season right now?
This season? Yeah. Well, so the thing about infectious diseases is that for each infectious disease, there's a season. And so we're in autumn right now. This is the rhinovirus time of year. So, you know, one of the reasons we have this colloquial saying of put your jacket on or else you're going to catch a cold when you go outside, that's because there's a strong correlation between the onset of autumnal weather and the transmission of rhinovirus. So this is rhinovirus season. Flu season will be up soon. And then when we enter into the spring, it will be chickenpox and measles season.
Okay. Dave, you must be very proud. One of the students you advised is now an evening at Eagan speaker, works at Columbia. Take us back. Tell us about Dr. Martinez as an undergrad.
Oh, yeah. Well, she was a fantastic student. In fact, I think what stands out most about Michaela is that I remember it was early on in my career when she was there, and she pretty much was willing to outwork everybody in the building. So she really took advantage of all the opportunities that were available to her. And she was smart, creative, and then just had this really strong work ethic, which is a lot of what science comes down to, and succeeding in science is your willingness to work hard and be motivated. And that was something Michaela had in spades.
Tell us a little bit about what you teach and how it has maybe turned into what she studies now. And then you can pick it up, Dr. Martinez, please.
Yeah, so I teach a variety of courses at UAS, and one of the classes that I teach is conservation biology, and that's all about trying to conserve rare forms of life. And actually, Michaela came and spoke to my class today because she sort of stood that principle on its head and is looking at ways to eliminate things that are pathogenic or deadly to humans. And so it's a lot of the same principles, but rather than trying to conserve things, you're trying to eliminate things that are undesirable. So it's really cool to see Michaela come in and all the great work she's done, and to think that maybe I had some small positive influence on her. She's done such great things since she left UAS. It's awesome to see.
Can you expand on that a little bit more about standing that idea on its head?
Yeah. So when I was at UAS, my work was mostly focused on the population ecology of ring seals. So these are the seals that polar bears eat, essentially. And the big question was whether or not these seals were vulnerable to extinction under climate change scenarios, given the early melting of ice in the spring in the Arctic. And essentially the same principles that we use to determine whether or not seal populations were vulnerable to local extinction, take those same ideas and then ask, how can we make pathogen populations vulnerable to extinction? And not only that, take it a step further, but how can we use vaccines to drive pathogen populations to extinction? And so all of my work has really leveraged very similar types of analyses and ecological thinking, but with the kind of reverse goal in mind of driving extinction.
And you were saying that you're sort of going to compare us to other mammals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is ring
yes.
seal going to be among them?
Well, so studying ring seals, which they're an Arctic marine mammal, they very beautifully orchestrate their behavior and their physiology to match their environmental conditions. So they breed in the springtime they give birth in the springtime when that's a favorable time for their offspring to enter in. There's more food abundance and such. And so I've studied humans and how we have seasonal changes in our reproductive biology, and actually seasonal changes in births and seasonal changes in mortality, and have really asked, or right now one of the things that I'm asking is whether or not those seasonal aspects that we can see in our biology are actually driven by some of the same physiological processes that we see in other mammals, like in ring seals.
What are a few of the seasonal changes that we might notice within ourselves?
Yeah, so the one that I'm actually most interested in and what I will be starting a clinical study next year to get at is whether or not we have seasonal changes in our immune system. So over the last few years, the evidence has built showing that we actually have day-night rhythms in our immune system. So our abilities to fight off bacterial and viral infections differs around the day-night cycle. And it's not that we're more or less susceptible to all diseases at a particular time. It's more that we have a restructuring of our immune system so that we're more susceptible to particular diseases at particular times of the day-night cycle. And so what I want to know is whether or not that same thing happens across the season. So is the reason why we have seasonal windows of times when we have specific epidemics, is that because there's some aspect of our biology that makes us more vulnerable to certain infections at certain times of year?
Okay. Something I seem to hear, in the media these days is that we are taking so many antibiotics mm-hmm. that we are sort of mitigating our ability to fight off certain things. Is there truth in that, and is that something that you look at as well?
Okay. So in terms of antibiotics are specific to bacterial infections. And antibiotics, a lot of the concerns are also how they modulate or affect our natural commensal bacteria. So we have bacteria that live in all parts of our body, and especially in our gut. And so some of the concerns in terms of antibiotics and health are really having to do with how do antibiotics, which are targeted or are supposed to be used as treatment or are being used as treatment for specific pathogens, how are they affecting the commensal or some of the good bacteria that live on our bodies? So that is kind of restricted within the realm of bacterial infections. What I mostly work on are viral infections. And so, yeah, that's a little bit outside my area.
Okay. And thinking about vaccines, I know it's very controversial and some people are pro and some against. What kind of advice do you give to, say, mothers who are thinking about vaccinating their babies?
Yeah, exactly. So this is actually a topic that's really near and dear to my heart, and I actually work on the infant vaccination schedule. And so the one thing I think is that scientists have been we really have been poor communicators when it comes to talking about vaccines, and all vaccines do have risks. The two vaccines that I work mostly on are the two polio vaccines, and the one thing that I'd like to say is that the reason why we recommend the uses of vaccines is that really we've done the cost benefits analysis. So the example I always like to give is for the oral polio vaccine. Before we licensed the first polio vaccine back in 1955 here in the U.S., it used to be that about 1 in 100 to 1 in 200 children would be paralyzed by polio. Every summer these outbreaks would happen. And we, even in 1 year, we had had 52,000 kids paralyzed in the 1940s in one summer, in the span of a few months in the United States. So these were very detrimental epidemics. Now, with the polio vaccines that we use today, the most effective vaccine, the oral polio vaccine, it doesn't come without risk. That vaccine contains a live virus, and in about every 1 million to 2 million doses that are given out, a child will be paralyzed by that vaccine. So now you have to take those two numbers and say, okay, we understand that there are risks with vaccines, but without those vaccines, when these diseases are allowed to run their course, the risks are even higher. And so each parent has to make their own informed decision about those cost benefits analyses. And so those are the numbers that I like to kind of put out there.
Interesting. Is the flu viral or bacterial?
The flu is a viral infection.
All right. Flu shots. Everyone's thinking about flu shots right now. What's your take
on
those?
We're going into flu season. So flu is such a kind of interesting disease because flu evolves very, very rapidly. So the reason that we have to get a new flu vaccine every year is because flu evolves so quickly, and it's not a very transmissible infection. For every person infected, they only infect about one or two other people, but we essentially lose immunity to flu every year because it evolves so quickly, it kind of outruns our immune system. So that's why we come out with a new vaccine every year. Now, the reason to take the flu vaccine is, depending on what age you are, the reason is different, right? So infants are quite vulnerable to complications with influenza. People over 60 are more vulnerable. For teenagers and people in midlife, the reason to take the flu vaccine is not because they're very likely to end up in the hospital, but really to help reduce transmission in the population so that you're helping protect some of the most vulnerable people in our community.
And your coworkers and everyone around
exactly.
You, right?
Yep, exactly.
Dave, what are you most excited for in her talk tomorrow?
Well, I'm just proud to have her here and super excited to hear what she has to say overall. But I think the thing that's most interesting to me is the fact that she's going to integrate the idea of looking at biological rhythms and circadian clocks and that sort of bit into thinking about disease. That's really novel and cool and exciting for me to see. I can't wait to hear what she has to say because I have no idea. So it'll be great.
Great. So 7 p.m. tomorrow at UAS in the Egan Library. Am I getting this all right, Dave?
That's right. Spot on.
Okay. Yeah,
at the Egan Lecture Hall.
Egan Lecture Hall. Oh, okay.
Yep.
Nice. It's been great talking to you, Dr. Martinez. Am I missing anything? Anything you'd like to add about your talk tomorrow night?
Nope. I think you covered it all.
And it's free, right?
Yes.
Always
Which
free.
Which is great. So 7 p.m. out there at the U. Thank you both so much for coming on the show.
Yep.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Thursday, September 21st, 23 minutes after the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Steve Guillon. He's going to be talking about a fundraiser for the victims of Hurricane Irma and Maria that's happening tomorrow night from 5 to 9 down at the flight deck. Steve, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here. So tell us a little bit about your connection down to that area that's been affected by these hurricanes.
Yeah, so I was living on St. Thomas for 6-plus years, and there's a lot of people that we're connected with up here that kind of make the transition from Juneau to St. Thomas, kind of a seasonal deal, but make one place their home a little bit more, and this is considered a home to all of us. But anyway, yeah, so a lot of us connected to it. Hurricane Irma came through on the 6th, and it was absolutely devastating, catastrophic. So really, we're just here just trying to raise awareness because they're very isolated islands that don't get the kind of support or the media attention, and we're just trying to show that Juneau's here to support, that people are here, another small community.
Isolated.
I mean, if something happened here, you know, we only have planes and boats bringing in supplies. The cruise ships are going to be down for two months easily, and just all that not coming in is devastating to the islands.
Having communicated with your friends and family down there, what is the scene like?
It's unreal. I mean, it's there are no words to kind of describe it. If you picture Juneau and how green it is and how lush it is, all the islands are very similar. They're very hilly, very green. Now picture all the vegetation here completely gone. Every leaf is gone. Everything is gone. It's brown. It's surreal. You can look at satellite images, and it's hard to, you know, comprehend what just happened. And it wiped the islands clean, and every building damaged. Buildings just completely destroyed. Boats, many, many boats sunk. Ferries, the way they're getting transportation, I mean, barges, everything is, it's very dire down there. It's scary.
I think I read somewhere that Irma had sustained winds of 185 miles per hour.
Yeah, imagine that, because we get some winds in here in the winter that can do some damage, but sustained winds for 3 hours plus of 185 mile an hour, I mean, total destruction. It's unbelievable. It's really hard to describe it.
And you were telling me before we got on the air that a lot of support is going to be towards transportation and getting food and supplies to individuals. Is that right?
Yeah. So the fundraiser is we're going to specifically be giving the funds to the people that they're on the ground that are they're waking up at 6 a.m. They have curfews. They wake up at 6 a.m. They're using chainsaws to get their way out to move debris. Then they're helping put a tarp on their neighbor's house, and they're moving more trees and getting to the boats and running supplies to St. Croix, to Puerto Rico. They were running supplies to St. That's what their lifelines were. So all the British Virgin Islands were devastated, and their lifeline was St. Thomas, and St. Thomas's lifeline was St. Croix in Puerto Rico. And now Wednesday, 2 days ago, Hurricane Maria comes through with very similar, it's a Category 5, catastrophic, same type of winds, comes through, totally destroys St. Croix, Puerto Rico, all of Puerto Rico, 3+ million people without power right now. It's insane. So now all the islands' lifelines are closing up, so it's really unreal. So.
Okay, so if people want to help, they can come down tomorrow, flight deck.
Correct.
Merchants Wharf. Tell us how to get there and all that.
Yeah, flight deck. Big shout out. Thank you to the hangar and flight deck for letting us do this. It's $15. Gets you a beer and pizza. Pizza Roma. Thank you very much. They're bringing in pizzas. We're gonna have it. You know, it's gonna be a fun. It's not a great situation that we're doing it for. But down in the islands, they like to have fun. They would want us to have fun. Like, we're going to have a party. We're going to have a DJ. Just raising that money to give it directly to them. Diamonds International donated a couple pieces to give away. Coastal or and Wings is giving away flight packages. There's a lot of giveaways, silent auctions. There's 50-50 raffle.
Okay. And you know, I know a lot of people can be skeptical about giving money because they're not sure where it's going or if it's going to the wrong places. But you say you have some connections to ensure that the money gets to the right place.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest thing too, is we're all skeptical about that, where our donation goes. You know, in this case, it is going to be trust. You know, come down and meet us and talk with everybody. But the funds, we want them going directly to the people there on the ground that are using their own money for fueling their own boats to bring in medical supplies from these spots. You know, we're not expecting that we're going to raise a huge amount of money, but whatever money we do raise is going to be helpful in that, and it's going to show them that they're not forgotten. And say Juno here cares about the Caribbean, they care about the Virgin Islands, because it's a very scary feeling for them being extremely isolated, and we're just trying to raise awareness, not be forgotten. The media can overlook it quickly. So that's the biggest thing. And, yeah, the funds are going to be going, transferring them directly down to we'll have a lot of control of who we give it to at what who needs it the most. Like, oftentimes it is going to go to fueling larger boats to get the supplies off from Puerto Rico and St. Croix. But I don't even know now, to be honest with you, because I haven't been able to talk to too many people since this came through Wednesday. They're on a 24-hour curfew. I can't even. So the biggest thing is just getting the money down to them directly in their hands. And we know it's going to be down there. I was planning on trying to get down there to help, and I'm going to as soon as I can, but now that's going to be delayed because flights are only going into Puerto Rico or St. Croix. So the goal is to just raise the money, raise awareness, and we'll show where the money's going via pictures, Facebook, and
Well, at least you can start by helping tomorrow night, sounds like, Steve. Come meet Steve and other supporters of Hurricane Irma and Maria tomorrow night, 5 to 9-ish?
5 to 9.
The flight deck.
Yep. $15 gets you a beer and pizza.
Okay. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Steve. Thanks for doing what you're doing. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, just thank you to everybody, all the sponsors supporting us, and thank you for letting us come on here and talk about it. It means a lot from one small community to another small community. So the support is huge. So thank you guys so much. Thank you.
Support for this KTOO programming is provided by Jesse Keel, candidate for City and Borough of Juneau Assembly in the municipal election October 3rd. Paid for by Keel for Assembly, 535 Harris Street, Juneau.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Thursday, September 21st, 2017. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 25 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me in the studio now are two folks to talk about the slam dunk. AEYC Best Starts Investing in Young Children event on Tuesday, September 26th at Centennial Hall. Kevin Ritchie, Joy Lyon, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Scott. Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. So Rock, Juno, Best Starts, AEYC. Let's start with you, Joy. What's AEYC?
Well, the Association for the Education of Young Children has been around for 30 years here in Southeast Alaska, and our mission is to promote high-quality early learning for all children, birth to age 8. We do that by supporting anyone who works with or cares about or has anything to do with young children. So we work with parents and with early educators and the community at large to help promote high-quality early learning.
All right. It may speak for itself, but Best Starts, Kevin.
Best Starts is exactly that. It's talking about Best Starts for Juno's children. And scientifically, we've known for a really long time, and anybody with a child knows this, the brain develops incredibly in the first 5 years. And recently, I'd say in the last 10 or 15, 20 years, scientists have determined that really your personality, whether you're good at communication or not, whether you're ready to do well in school, whether you're a person who gets mad easily, the beginning of even mental illnesses, all that can happen essentially before the age of five, you know, all the things that put those things in place. And so knowing that, we have the state of Alaska who measures the readiness of kids to get into kindergarten, and they say that 60% of our kids that enter kindergarten in Juneau are not ready for kindergarten. They don't have the communication skills, the readiness to learn.
Here in the capital city of
Alaska.
Here
in the capital city, 60%. That's 6 out of every 10 kids that goes into kindergarten is not ready. But the really appalling part, scary, and something that's fixable is that 60% seems to persist essentially all the way through school. The state of Alaska's standardized tests just showed that approximately 60% of our kids in elementary are not proficient in English, science, math, and so on all the way up through the 10th grade. And they stopped measuring after the 10th grade because presumably not much is going to change, I guess. But it's really scary when you think that 60% of our kids are not ready for kindergarten and 60% of our kids never become proficient in English, science, and math, which are pretty much the reason why you can get and keep a job. But not only that, in terms of how likely kids are to interact with the crime, or, you know, the justice system goes way up if you don't have preschool or high-quality child care. You know, there's just all sorts of factors. I think everybody in Juneau recognizes that child care, the lack of child care, is a serious problem. But until now, nobody's really had a plan to fix it, and that's kind of where Best Starts is at.
Okay. Is this a town hall, would you say?
Yeah, this is a town hall, and Mayor Kelch is going to give a greeting, and we have a special surprise guest that's championing this cause as well. And so it's going to be set up for everyone. So anyone, sometimes parents think that they have an issue with child care and that's their personal problem. But this is really to pull in everyone because it's a community-wide issue. We need educators there. We need business owners there. We need anyone who works with people who are having challenges because we're looking at shifting and proactively upfront. And it really is a game changer for Juneau that we're kind of ignoring these first 5 years. It's like, well, whatever, fend for yourself. And then once you get to kindergarten, then we'll care about you and we'll invest in you. And what we know now is that is too late. We really have to shift earlier to invest earlier. And so at this town hall, we're going to look at some questions. We're going to show not just with data but with stories, you know, about kids coming into kindergarten. Are they ready? How are our kids doing compared to the rest of the state with their stress levels, with the adverse childhood experiences? And we'll look at what does it mean for the economy of Juneau? There's a lot of data, and the McDowell Group is going to be there, Jim Calvin, to share their study of how Juneau's economy is impacted by early childhood.
Kevin, before we got on the air, you said it took a long time for this to land with
yes.
you.
Yes.
The thought of how important it is to have this care in early childhood. What was it that finally did make it land?
Hearing it over and over. And we're trying to get people listening to it and hearing it over and over. It took me, you know, I'm 66. It took me about, I don't know, 25 times.
Just proved you learn faster younger.
But really, I obviously do not have any young children. And I do have grandchildren, one grandchild in town. And so I kind of think about this, but really it really hits home. I care a lot about the community, and even though I don't have a child that's young, I care about what happens to people in Juneau. And, you know, like right now, I think to a certain extent some of our issues in Juneau with crime and drug addiction and so on are a measure of how well we've helped our kids in the past. And so I think that there's really good reasons to change things to make Juneau a better town.
What are a few, there are probably a few things that we have all agreed on. What are a few things that parents who are listening right now can be doing?
Reading and talking with their children. Because when you look at it, if a parent reads and talks with their children 30 minutes a day, by the time they've reached kindergarten, they've got 1,000 hours of that direct, nurturing, one-on-one learning time. And that's equal to the whole year of kindergarten. And you look at, you know, 6-hour day, 180 days. So you really have this broad spread of kids being ready or not. And that's why it's so hard to catch up. Because kids that have had 1,000 hours of this really high-impact learning in their early years, and then there's kids that don't. And that's the really a hard thing for a kindergarten teacher to catch up, you know, and all through grade school because that kind of vocabulary and the ability to self-regulate, impulse control, the social skills, getting along with others, those are the things that are really so important in early childhood. And when you don't have those, going into a classroom environment, everything is more and more complicated as you learn. It's like I remember missing a week of algebra in ninth grade, and I did okay for a while because I did know some, but then I kept getting more and more complex until I was totally lost. So that's
30 minutes a day, though.
30 minutes
reading
a day.
And talking. That's not a lot of time.
No, and it's just spread out, you know, and parents are really busy these days. And I would say your technology is something that's growing to be a distraction from parents talking with their kids. You'll see it in the community, and I'm guilty too. And, you know, it's a really big pull to, I'm going to take a picture of my child and upload it, but meanwhile, there's some missing time there. You know, it's a balance for everybody these days, and I think that's something that parents have an extra struggle with nowadays.
Speaking of technology, I see a lot of kids with phones, these like little kids with phones, spending time on them. What's research saying about that?
Well, the pediatricians and the experts are saying that when you are, you know, technology is not bad. You might have grandma on the, you know, FaceTime. That's good. Whenever parents are with their children and you're doing it together, if you're sharing an e-book, for example, that would be fine. Yeah. So it's using it wisely and like any other.
Well, you know, when you said what can parents do, what's really important is we actually, Best Starts and AEYC put together a petition asking parents to see if they supported additional child care in Juneau and high-quality preschool. And there were 900 signatures asking the assembly to do something about it. And I think everybody realizes it's a problem, but it seems too big and too scary to really be solvable. But the reality is it's pretty solvable. Working with the private sector, all the current providers right now, a lot of people think that, yeah, you can just get more people in town that run daycare centers. But the problem is to run a daycare center, it'd be like if you had to privately fund the high school, for example.
Sure.
It would be very difficult to do. So what we're doing is working with the private sector and providing just enough resources to the private sector to be able to pay their people living wage right now. Most child care workers are making $12 an hour, very few benefits. And that provides for a lack of stability in daycare providers and very, very difficult to fill positions. So even though there's a huge unmet demand, parents can't afford it to pay enough to get the quality of service that their kids really need. And so that's where Best Start steps in. And the cost, it sounds a lot, like $3 million a year, but that would, we feel, supplement the current programs that exist to allow more daycare centers to open, allow daycare centers to hire people and pay them a living wage, and so on. And so the way of doing it, $3 million a year, if you want to put it in perspective, is if you were, it's about what it takes to fund one half year of K through 12, but we're talking being able to supplement what currently exists for 5 years with that same amount of money. So it's very doable if parents and people around town say they want to do it.
You know, it, you bring up preschool has traditionally been privately run, right?
Yes.
Is there a movement or an argument for making it public?
It could be public, and, you know, the school district actually is dabbling in preschool. Whether the state of Alaska and whether Juneau is ready for a public preschool, I don't think so. It's just very expensive, very complicated. But there's a lot of great public providers around. There's a lot of people who dedicate their lives to it. All they have to do is be able to make a decent living or some living.
So Best Starts will work with the school district, with Head Start, with all the different preschools in Juneau currently and building more of them. And so that's what's really nice is that we're using all of the existing funding streams and building on them to fill in the gaps. And speaking of technology, it's going to be really fun at the event, which, again, is Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, September 26th, 5:30 at Centennial Hall. We're going to do some live polling, so it's really exciting and fun, and we're going to have different table discussions, a variety of different film clips, so short film clips interspersed with lots of live polling and discussion.
Sounds like fun. 5:30 to 8. A talk by the mayor, light dinner, live polling, not bowling, polling.
Polling, yeah.
Thank you both for coming on the show, Kevin, Richie, Joy Lyon. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Oh, who's the guest you talked about?
Oh, you'll have to come to find out. So.
Would it be somebody in sports?
Maybe.
Okay.
Thank you, too. Chad.
Must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they fix, the one you know by. Don't you ever ask them why, if they told you you would cry, so just look at them and sigh.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon, about 10 minutes till the top of the hour, and it's Thursday, and it's time for Arts Up with Nancy DeCherney. Welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hey, thank you. It's great to be here, and this is a great weekend in Juneau. Once again.
Here we go.
Here we go. Chad Deity over at the Perseverance Theater. This absolutely is a do not miss. Outright prolonged laughter. You get to boo the villain. You get to wave your arms. It's just like it's interactive.
I've heard praise from even the skeptics.
Even the skeptics. This is a real fun show over at Perseverance. Get your tickets now. I just have to say I thoroughly enjoyed myself and may take advantage of the new thing that they have where you can go see things twice if you're a season ticket holder. So,
wow.
Yeah, let's do
you
that.
Heard it here.
I want to see everybody over there. So that's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. You can do that, and I think Sunday as well. So let's do that. There is a yoga recovery fundraiser at the Yoga Path on Friday night from 5 to 7. They go, this is a for people who are working on sobriety, which I think is part of our focus this period of time. There's a happy hour meditation at the Shambhala Center from 5:30 to 6:30 on Friday. The evening at Egan, I think, is a prelude to the big read that's coming up, which is we're all reading as a community, I guess.
Yeah, and she was on the show today, Dr. Martinez.
So talking about the clockwork of epidemics in health and disease. And the book that the big read is based on is Station 11, which is about everything being wiped out due to an epidemic of illness. So, and I was looking into the future, and the whole month of October has cool stuff going on with that, creepy movies and lectures and fun things. So Perseverance is having its annual costume sale Saturday morning from 9 to 1 over at Brown Boots, so you can go there and pick up some cool furs or strange hats or
get ready for Day of the Dead or Halloween
jewelry, whatever, you know. Maybe it's just some stuff you want to wear around, who knows. There is the Aware's doing their fall advocacy training from 10 to 4, family fun fest day at the Glacier. There's all kinds of activities for families out at the Glacier from 10 until 2. You can create art, see a live raven, hike with a naturalist, hear a story, become a junior ranger, and earn your Agent of Discovery Aware thing. So go on out 10 to 2. It doesn't tell me the age range here, but I think it sounds like fun even if you're an adult. So go there and take your kid or something. It's 10 to 12 is the Saturday Wild Mushroom Walk. There's a lot of mushrooms out lately. I've been seeing all kinds of people bringing in all kinds of really great things. That we'll meet at Fish Creek, and there'll be a guest and some local experts, so you can wander around and learn about mushrooms. Capital Brewfest is at the Jack from noon until 5, and I know there are still some tickets left, remarkably enough, and you get them by going to capbrewfest.com. So lots of, if you're a beer drinker, this is the event for you. From 1 to 2:30, there is the Gastineau Genealogical Society that the Latter-day Saints do. If you're interested in learning about your past and all your history, that's a good thing to go and find out about it. It's free. From 4:45 to 8, there's a drawing group at the Canvas, and they say 4:45 because they're going to slam the doors at 5, so get there on time. and it's the Juno Lyric Opera's Who's Your Diva over at Centennial Hall. It's their big fundraiser, a competition to see who's going to be this year's primo diva. So go on over for that. Tickets are still available. You can get them at Hearthside Books at the Jack online, all that sort of stuff. On Sunday, you know, we have this new program called Artists of All Nations. It's we have this the Jack open in the afternoon on the last Sunday of the month for the most part. And from 1 to 5, and you can just come, bring your knitting, bring your weaving, bring your painting, bring whatever you're doing. There was skateboard painting going on last time, there was weaving, there's kids, there's food. Just come on down. It's a community event, and it's free thanks to the Rasmussen Foundation. So 1 to 5 on this Sunday. As you can see, the Chad Deity is at 4, so it's a matinee opportunity. On Monday, from 5 to 6, you can come to here to the 360 North and listen to the School Board Candidates Forum. And then from 6:15 to 7:15, the Assembly Candidate Forum. Really important to be informed. And if you can't get to these, we have posted comments that the candidates have sent to us on our website. It's also in the Jack, so if you come by, you can read them. They're on our Facebook page and on our web page. So it's important to be an informed voter. That's coming up on the 3rd. Let's see. We've got a Juno Town Hall for Safe, Affordable, High-Quality Child Care and Preschool. Was that what you were just talking about?
Yep.
Yes. And then there is at 6:30 on Tuesday, Moon Facts and Follies over at the Marie Drake Planetarium. So, and, you know, Juno Dance Theater is doing all these fitness classes and stuff in case you feel like dancing instead of exercising. How can you tell the difference? So that's kind of what's going on. It's a great weekend. And as I said, I hope to see everybody at Chad Deity. You're not going to regret it. I would say that it's probably PG-13.
Okay.
Well, you know, there's language. Or something.
Okay. If people want to see this list that of which you speak.
Yes. You can come to the jahc.org, and you can also go to ktoo.org. And if you want this emailed to you, we print it up in a little printed thing, and we do email this out to various people, hotels, such like that. But people, if you would like to have it come to your own email list, let me know.
All right.
Council. So there we have it.
Nancy DeCherney, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you want to add?
Do we have a little minute?
We do.
Okay. Well, Jeff handed me this little business about the sculpture series being installed on the Seawalk. And I thought maybe I've had this question come up a couple of times about what is 1% art? How do I tap into the 1% art? So just let me explain that the Juno does have a policy that if you have a public project funded by public money, that 1% of that money that goes into the project goes towards art. And there is a committee, a selection committee that's formed. The Arts Council helps with the selection of the people who are on that committee, and the committee works with whatever department it is to figure out what kind of things would like to be, like the flags. There's just a variety of things all around town, and I would really like it if we celebrated these things more so that people understood this. It's not like the city has a little pile of money that we can tap into and get. It's part of the construction project. So anytime there's a big project like this, that's what's happening. And I want to encourage people to go to the website for the guy that's putting the things on our front.
Cliff Garten? Is that how you say his
name? Yes. Google Ethereal Bodies 8. They are beautiful. I go to the Public Art Network every year, and this did win an award last year. They're gorgeous. It's going to be beautiful scene, especially at night.
Some of them are kind of big, right?
Yeah, they're like 20 feet tall.
And those are huge. All along the waterfront,
you know,
illuminated by LEDs, right, at night?
Changing colors, all sorts of stuff. We were just looking across. I happen to live on the Douglas side, and looking at how pretty the ships are in the evening, and it's all sparkly and that. And we were thinking, gosh, we'll be sad when the ships are gone, but these things will be there and make the waterfront still just as beautiful. So,
and mostly stainless steel too, right?
Yes, I'm not totally familiar with his project, but his other work, I can say, if it's at all like that, we're going to love it.
And I think it starts going in pretty soon, like
pretty
next
soon.
Week or something.
Cool.
All right, Nancy DeCherney, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Andy Klein will be your host tomorrow. The forecast for tomorrow calls for showers likely, mostly cloudy with a high near 50.